By the way, this book called The First Test of Messiah, it got everything I'm covering in this session, but it has a lot more. What this book does is take all of the prophecies of Scripture, it's using Revelation as a base, and then brings in many other passages of Scripture, and puts them in chronological sequence. You can tell in what order these prophecies will be fulfilled. And then you have several appendices taking various themes, like immortality, the place of the dead, and things of that nature. So I've got a lot of information, and that'll be available in the book table as soon as our session ends. Now let me say a few more things about Israel and the kingdom. Then I want to pick up the bottom part of this outline and the Gentiles and the kingdom. What the Bible prophesies is, as a result of the second coming, there'll be a huge worldwide earthquake where many geographical changes will occur. So while some things remain the same, many other things will be brand new. And among the new things in the kingdom, down the center of Israel, there'll be this huge mountain arising that will become the highest mountain in the world. And the measurements of this mountain with this square plateau on top will be measuring 50 miles by 50 miles or 80 kilometers by 80 kilometers. So you can mark down some passages on this mountain. Isaiah chapter 2, verses 2 and 3. Isaiah 2, verses 2 and 3 will be the highest mountain in the world. Isaiah 27:13 will become the center of Jewish worship. Isaiah 56:6-8 be a place of prayer for both Jews and Gentiles alike. Isaiah 66:20 will be the center of Israel's regathering. Micah chapter 4, verse 1 and 2, copying Isaiah, the highest mountain in the world. Ezekiel chapter 17, verses 22 to 24. It's called the Mountain of the Height of Israel, and lush greenery and vegetation all around. Ezekiel 20, verse 40 and 41. The center of Jewish worship. You have three passages in Ezekiel that bit by bit give us all of the graphic descriptions. And these are Ezekiel chapter 40, verses 1 through 4. Ezekiel chapter 45, verses 1 through 8. Ezekiel 45, verses 1 through 8. And the last passage is chapter 48, verses 8 through 20. And what describes is what you see in this chart on page 450. You can look at it at the back table later. It could be hard for you to see. It's a bit on the small side. We don't have a picture on it. But be 50 or 80 kilometers square. In the northern section, measuring 20 by 50 miles, will have the millennial temple inside the north shore, the north section. It won't be in Jerusalem as it has been previously. So it'll be right in the center. The temple building is going to be about a mile square, which is too big for the present temple compound, which is about a quarter mile square. The rest of the area will be for the priests. And the priest that will be functioning in this system will be the priest of the line of Zadok, Z-A-D-O-K, because Zadok was loyal to both David and Solomon, and they're rewarded by serving as the priests in this section. In the middle section will be the tribe of Levi. And on the border between the central and middle section are 20 chambers. And Levites that are assigned to be the caretakers of the temple, while they're the time that they're going to serve as caretakers, they'll live in these chambers and just commute each day, go up in the morning, back at night. And after the service is over, they'll change and go back to the Levitical section, and all Levites will live in this section. In the south section, the central section, also 20 by 50, in the south section, the middle, measuring 10 miles by 10, 10 miles with the, will be the millennial Jerusalem. On each side of Jerusalem will be a food growing area for the residents of Jerusalem. I'll say a few more things about this as we move. Now, what he describes in chapter 40, verse 5 to chapter 43, verse 27, will be the millennial temple, all of the measurements and everything else. And then in chapter 44, verse 1 through chapter 46, verse 24, 44, 1 through 46, 24, he describes the millennial system of priesthood and sacrifice. So there will be a sacrificial system, but some people say that this is going to be a restoration to the Mosaic law. That's not true, because there are many differences and contradictions between the Mosaic sacrificial system and the kingdom sacrificial system. So it'll be a new system that will have points of similarity, but also many points of dissimilarity with the Mosaic system. So it'll be a sacrificial system under kingdom law. And the big debate is this really literal or allegorical? If it's not literal, then why did he give us such tremendous details, measurements, and everything else? He gave the same details for the tabernacle. Nobody makes that non-literal. And when the second temple was built, you got all these same details and measurements, and nobody makes that allegorical. There's no reason to make this new system as simply symbolic and not literal. And if they're symbolic, he doesn't explain what the symbols mean. And there are symbols elsewhere in this book, but every symbol is explained. But the temple is not explained. So what are the purposes of this temple? Let's begin, first of all, to remember that not even the Mosaic sacrifices took away sin. And Hebrews chapter 10, verses 1 through 4, Hebrews 10, verses 1 through 4, not even the blood of bulls and goats could take away sin. And that was the most solemn sacrifice, the Day of Atonement sacrifice, but it could not take sin away. It did cover the sin. It did restore fellowship. What it could not do is take the sin away. By the same token, the sacrificial system here will not take any sin away. But about the purposes. Now, we, the body of the Messiah, were commanded to do something literal and visual. Partake of the bread and partake of the cup for what reason? To show forth his death. For how long? Till he returned. The second coming, we're told, the picture, the ceremony of the bread and the cup will cease. in place of it, there's going to be an animal sacrifice for the Jewish people and also for the Gentile people that will serve as a means of covering their sin. But the sin which led to their salvation was the removal of that sin, as it was for ours, but we still sin as believers. And when we sin as believers, there are the responses, 1 John 1:9. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. So by means of confession, we restore fellowship with the Father. But for the people in the kingdom, it'll be like paying a fine. If we speed and get a ticket, we pay a fine. By the same token, they'll pay a fine. It'll be the purchasing and the offering of a blood sacrifice. And just the sacrifices of Moses look forward to Christ's sacrifice, the sacrifices of the kingdom will look back. I will give for us in the same way as the bread and the cup does for us today. One purpose I might mention is to restore theocratic fellowship, because the kingdom will be a theocracy. And restore and be able to receive theocratic blessings in a theocracy requires ritual cleansing from ritual uncleanness. Another purpose will be to restore the situation of ritual cleansing from ritual uncleanness. There are a number of other reasons that are found in the book, which are some of the reasons. Now, chapter 47. In chapter 47, verses 1 through 12, correlating with two other passages, Joel chapter 3, verse 18, Joel 3:18, and Zechariah 14:8, there'll be a new millennial river. If I could find it here real quick.
Arnold, can you pull your mic just a bit away from your...
Just that if I keep it too far away, yeah. The people in the back have a hard time hearing. Okay, this millennial river described in this passage, it'll flow from the doorway of the Millennial Temple. It'll initially flow east, then turn south and go to a section of Levi and come to Jerusalem. In Jerusalem, the river will split in two, with half of it going to the east and entering into the going into the west, emptying into the Mediterranean, and the other one will go eastward and emptying into the Dead Sea, causing the Dead Sea to become a living sea. The minerals in the Dead Sea today are so thick, fish that are thrown into the sea or come down the Jordan River end up dying as they can make a U-turn and go upstream on the Jordan River. And what's going to, this river is going to make the Dead Sea alive again. And we're told it'll become a major fishing industry. For the whole kingdom. But if you still want to do your Dead Sea float, Ezekiel says the south end will still be given over to salt. So if you still want to do your Dead Sea float, you can't do it where they do it today at Engedi or in Bergek. You have to go to the southern end of the Dead Sea. And there you'll be able to float on the Dead Sea. So you have to just change your habits, nothing more. Now in chapter 47, verse 13, to chapter 48, verse 29, he shows how the tribes will be settled. They won't be the same way as you find in the book of Joshua and Judges. But in his larger picture of Israel, the first seven tribes would be settled equally from north to south on the north side of this mountain, and then five other tribes will settle on the south of this mountain. And they'll be able to do this because only now will they, for the first time, get to actually possess all of the promised land, settle all the promised land, and live in the promised land. There's a lot of things about the Mill of Jerusalem, which I will not be able, I'll just go ahead and skip that for now. Let's go back to the chart on your outline, not the chart, but the outline in your bulletin. And let's see a few things about the Gentiles in the Messianic Kingdom. Okay, capital H, general characteristics. I'll give you some passages to mark down. Isaiah 11, verse 10. Messiah will be the center of Gentile attention. Isaiah 14, verse 1 and 2, the Gentiles will be possessed by Israel. Isaiah 42, verse 1, the Gentiles will receive justice from the Messiah. Isaiah 49, verses 5 to 7. The Messiah will become the light to the Gentiles. Isaiah 56, verses 1 through 8. They'll receive the benefits of temple worship. And he points out that what was prohibited in the Mosaic law will be allowed under the temple, under the kingdom law, in that the millennial temple will be open to all Gentiles, will be the house of prayer for all Gentiles. And he connects this as the new option resulting from Israel's final restoration. Isaiah 66, verses 18 to 24. The Gentiles will come to land of Israel to see the visible Shekhinah, the Shekinah glory. Gentiles also be used to help conduct the Jews back to the land. Gentiles will also get to worship at the mountain of the house of Jehovah. And what's interesting is that what was not allowed under the Mosaic law will also be allowed under kingdom law. But in verse 21 of chapter 66, God will also choose Gentiles to serve as priests in the millennial house. So while the Jewish priests will come from only one line, the line of Zadok, which is still an Aaronic line, Gentiles will also get to serve as priests, which would not have been allowed in the Mosaic system, but would be allowed in the kingdom law. And so Gentiles will get to worship in this place as well, in verses 23 and 24. Now we come to another issue. Capital B, the obligation to observe the Feast of Tabernacles. Under Mosaic law, this was obligatory only for Jews. From the kingdom law, it'll be obligatory for both Jews and all Gentile nations. Every Gentile nation would be obligated to send a delegation to Jerusalem for the purpose of observing the Feast of Tabernacles. Any nation that will fail to do so will suffer a drought, so they won't do it again the next year. This is Zechariah chapter 14, verses 16 through 19. Zechariah 14, verses 16 through 19. focusing more on these couple seed yarb states, there's going to be two principles that God's going to use concerning the future of the yarb states. Two principles. The first principle is, how closely are they related by blood to Israel? How closely are they blood related to Israel? And the closer the blood tie, the greater degree of judgment. And the second principle he will use is the history of anti-Semitism. And the longer the history of anti-Semitism, the greater judgment. Now, key passage to write down would be Psalm 83, verses 1 through 8. Psalm 83, verses 1 through 8. That talks about a conglomeration of nations. They list them all. And their goal is to annihilate the Jewish state. And we saw this as fulfilled in the War of Independence of 1948, followed by the Six-Day War in 1967. Ezekiel 35, verses 1 through 5, Ezekiel 35, verses 1 through 5 points out, what the Arab peoples have been guilty of is perpetual hatred, perpetual animosity against the Jewish people. And then you have in the book of Obadiah. Now, well, I don't remember what chapter it's in, but whatever chapter might be in, it's verses 10 through 14. Verses 10 through 14. But the land of Edom, which is now southern Jordan, has had perpetual violence against the Jewish people. Let's take the countries individually. Now, ultimately, peace will come between Israel and the Arab states in one of three ways. With some, it'll be by means of occupation. Secondly, with some, it'll be by means of destruction. But thirdly, the best part, with some, it will mean peace comes by conversion. It does not have the same future for each of these Arab states, which is why we have to list them separately. We begin with Lebanon, and peace will come between Israel and Lebanon by means of occupation, because Lebanon has always been part of the Promised Land. It's also that part of the Promised Land that Jewish people never had. By the second coming, all of Lebanon will suddenly become part of Israel, and some of the northern tribes will be settling in what is today Lebanon. And there will not be a separate country called Lebanon, ancient Phoenicia. All of that will be part of the restored Israel. And you can see that from the based upon the borders of Israel in Ezekiel chapter 47, verse 13, as it Ezekiel 47, 13 to chapter 48, verse 29. And that passage points out that what is now Lebanon will be part of millennial Israel. Moving point two to Jordan. Modern day Jordan comprises three ancient territories: Edom, which is now southern Jordan, Moab, which is central Jordan, Ammon, which is northern Jordan. And God does not have quite the same future for all three, so we'll take them individually, moving south to north. We begin with Edomite Jordan, which is southern Jordan, and peace will come between Israel and southern Jordan by means of a destruction that will be total. Here's some passages you can mark down. Ezekiel chapter 35, verses 6 to 16. Ezekiel 35, verses 6 to 16. Describes the massiveness and totality of Edomite destruction. Jeremiah chapter 49, verses 7 through 13, and verses 9 through 26. Jeremiah 49, 7 through 13, and 19 to 26 focuses on the totality accomplished by means of war. Obadiah, verses 5 to 9. Obadiah, verses 5 to 9, focuses on their totality. And verses 17 to 21, 17 to 21, along with Ezekiel 25, verses 12 to 14, Ezekiel 25, 12 to 14. What the scribe says at some point there's going to be a war that will break out between Israel and southern Jordan, ancient Edom. And God will initially use Israel to destroy as much of Edom as he intends to use them for destruction. But then what God will do is rain fire and brimstone upon the land of southern Jordan, so that there is a total destruction of totality of life, both human and animal. Why is God so severe on Edom? Because the closest blood tie is between Israel and Edom, the two nations that came from twin brothers. Edom from Esau, Israel from Jacob. And because it's the closest of blood ties, and because of the long animosity of history from Edomites, they face a total annihilation. So peace comes between Israel and southern Jordan by means of a total destruction. Next, we go to Moabite Jordan, which is Jeremiah chapter 48. Jeremiah 48. In verses 1 through 46, he describes a destruction of Moab that is partial. And those who survive will come to faith. So in verse 47, those who survive will be allowed to come back and reestablish the country known as Moab. So there will be a saved Moab living in the Messianic Kingdom. And moving further north in Ammonite Jordan, Jeremiah 49 verses 1 through 6, Jeremiah 49 verses 1 through 6. In verses 1 through 5, there'll be a destruction, but a remnant does survive that comes to faith, and so there will be a land called Ammon as a saved nation in the Messianic Kingdom. Now, both Moab and Ammon also have a blood tie with Israel, but not as close as Edom was, because Lot had a nephew named Abraham had a nephew named Lot, and Lot produced children through his daughters. And one was named Moab, and one was Ammonite. So their blood tie with Israel is a bit more distant, and so the judgment is not as severe. Now we go to Egypt. And peace will come between Israel and Egypt, initially by destruction, followed by conversion. So in verses 1 through 10, it describes the punishment of Egypt that leads to anarchy, civil war. In verses 11 through 15, he also points out it is the leadership of Israel that is guilty of leading Egypt astray. And in modern history, there were three major wars. In the War of Independence, Egypt had a king, and because they lost the war, he was exiled. There came a second war against Egypt in 1956 under Nasser, and they lost. Nasser stayed in power, and then in 1967 came the third war with Egypt. And again, the Egyptians lost. Then in verse 16 and 17, he points out Egypt will develop a rather unusual fear of Israel. Then he goes on to point out, ultimately, Egypt's conversion in verses 19 through 22. that Egypt will fall under a cruel dictatorship. And because of this cruel dictatorship, they finally move away from Allah and Mohammedanism or Islam and worship the God of Israel through Jesus the Messiah, and Egypt will undergo a national conversion. However, Egypt has been the oldest anti-Semitic nation. Their wars against Israel began as early as Exodus chapter 1. And that long history cannot be simply excused in light of the Abrahamic covenant. So what will happen is that Egypt, for the first 40 years of the Messianic kingdom, will be dispersed around the world. There'll be a worldwide dispersion. And the land of Egypt will be desolate with no human inhabitants for the first 40 years of the kingdom. But then after 40 years of dispersion, they'll be gathered back to the land of Egypt. Remaining 960 years of the kingdom, there will be a land called Egypt. Also be involved in sending delegations to Jerusalem for the Feast of Tabernacles. So peace comes between Israel and Egypt initially by destruction, but ultimately by conversion. Now we go down to Assyria.
What was the reference for that? Ezekiel?
Isaiah 19.
Thank you.
Well, the 40 years of dispersion is going to be as Ezekiel chapter 29, verses 1 through 16. I may have forgotten to give that to you.
Thank you.
Ezekiel 29, 1 through 16.
Thank you.
I have a photographic memory, but I just keep on got a film. Now we go to Iraq. Iraq is what is now, what used to be ancient Assyria, not Syria, but Assyria. And their future is Isaiah 19, verse 23 to 25. Isaiah 19, 23 to 25. And what he promises is that in the future, there'll be an economic union in verse 23 between Assyria, Egypt, and Israel. And the reason is in verse 24 and 25, not only does Egypt undergo a national salvation, so does ancient Assyria, which is now northern Iraq. And so peace will come between Israel and northern Iraq, ancient Assyria, by means of salvation. Moving down to point five, we have Saudi Arabia. That's in Jeremiah 49, verses 28 to 33. Jeremiah 49, verses 28 to 33. Peace will come between Israel and Saudi Arabia, also by means of destruction, but not as total as it will be for southern Jordan and southern Iraq. It'll have no human inhabitants, but it will have animalistic inhabitants. And now we come to Iran. Just a point of technicality, Iran is not an Arab nation, it is a Persian nation. The language is not Arabic, but Farsi. What they share with the Arab peoples is the religion of Islam, but they're not ethnically Arab, and their language is not Arabic. And their future is found in Jeremiah 49, verses 34 through 39. Jeremiah 49, verses 34 through 39. In that peace will come between Israel and Iran by means of an initial destruction, but ultimately by conversion. At the present time, Israel's worst enemy is Iran. But that will change. Now we can conclude with the last two points on the capital theme, the two desolate spots in the Messianic kingdom. Now, one of these two spots we made reference to, but it was something we didn't fully deal with just yet, and that was Edom, which is southern Jordan, is going to be a land where about half the world's demons will be confined. So Satan will be in the abyss, which is in the center of the earth, but the demons will not be there with him. They'll be confined in two other localities. This first of all will be in the land of Edom, which is southern Jordan. So again, after God uses Israel to do as much damage as they want, God will then send fire and brimstone upon the land of southern Jordan. So verse is Isaiah 34, verses 8 through 15. Isaiah 34, 8 through 15 will become the abode of demons. Jeremiah 49, 7 and 18. Jeremiah 49, 7 and 18 focuses on their totality of destruction. And the reason God is so severe is, again, this is the closest of the blood ties. In Ezekiel 35, verses 10 through 15, Ezekiel 35, 10 through 15, is due to their perpetual animosity towards the people of Israel. And let's go to Babylon, which is today southern Iraq. And peace will come between Israel and southern Iraq also by means of eternal destruction. So Isaiah chapter 13, verses 20 through 22. Isaiah 13, 20-22. Babylon will be inhabited by demons in the Messianic kingdom, so those not confined in Edom or southern Jordan will be confined in southern Iraq or Babylonia. In Jeremiah 50, verse 39 and 40, Jeremiah 15, verse 39 and 40, they'll suffer the same kind of destruction that God did upon Sodom and Gomorrah, which was raining fire and brimstone. Jeremiah 51, verses 41 through 43, Jeremiah 51, 41 through 43, emphasizes the totality of Babylon's destruction. Revelation 18, verse 1 and 2. Revelation 18, verse 1 and 2 will be the abode of demons. Revelation 19, verse 3. 19, verse 3. Just as in southern Jordan, so also in southern Iraq, the land of will be gone with constant smoke and brimstone smoke for the whole thousand-year kingdom. And so while the rest of the world will be blossoming as the rose, as the Garden of Eden, nevertheless, there'll be two territories. There'll be a land of smoking fire and smoking brimstone inhabited by demons who are going to be confined in these territories. Now, we didn't cover everything, but we did cover a lot of things, and the rest is in the book. But let me conclude by making an application. Here we see what Paul teaches about both the goodness and the severity of God. As far as we see the goodness, we have the purification, the absence of the Adamic curse. We see a perfect government. They'll function perfectly. There'll be no red tape in this government. Because a Jewish government, there might be blue and white tape, but not red tape. There'll be a perfect environment, perfect weather, perfect justice, and also long life. Even unbelievers get to live 100 years. But then we'll see the severity of God in the desolation. And God takes sin very seriously. There's instantaneous judgment. There's death for unbelievers. And God will especially punish any sins committed by Gentiles against the Jews.